Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next, a dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Good morning. This is What's Next. I'm your guest host, Bentley. Today, we are talking about music business education with Ian Robinson and Kimon Baldin of Ear Quality. Ian Robinson, Kimon Baldin, I'm so excited to talk to you because of your individual achievements, but also because of Ear Quality, established in 2018, established in Buffalo, but we have to also give a shout out to Niagara Falls.
Yeah, absolutely. Come on now.
What is Ear Quality?
Ooh, I'll start off if you don't mind, Key. I like to say Ear Quality is an artist relationships company because I don't like to say we're a management company because we can't manage everyone. Management is more of a relationship. And you can't get in a relationship with everybody, but we come in and help educate and execute. That's why I like to say the two E's that we do, educate, execute. You can be a talented artist, but you're so talented, you don't know how to execute your ideas. You have all this creativity. So what our job is to come in to educate you on the business, because when we are done, we don't want to leave you where the same place that we found you at. And then we come and execute. So from music videos to understanding how you get paid, anything I'm missing?
Setting development, up meetings, scheduling, events, helping you get on certain platforms, you know, radio shows like this, connecting you and just putting you into the ecosystem that is Ear Quality and everything related to Buffalo, Niagara Falls, Western New York music.
So do artists come to you and search for advice or representation? Do you seek out artists?
I would say both.
Yeah.
I would say both. Kimon and I are always out, so some way, shape, or form, either someone asks about what's on our hoodie, or they tell us that they heard about us, or they seen something on social media, and like, hey, what do you guys do? And when we educate them, I want to do this, or we had a great relationship with someone else, and someone else recommended them to us.
So how did Ear Quality get started? Your friends? Right. You spend holidays together?
Yeah. I go to keep my house every Thanksgiving.
Yeah. It's part of my routine. Quite a few holidays.
Yeah.
Quite a few. I mean,
I'm adopted son.
Me and Ian been friends for like over, I want to say 20 years.
Yeah, it's over 20 years.
I want to say 20 years.
They be pushing 25, to be honest.
That's crazy. So we met in middle school, but this idea of
his middle school shut down, so he had to come to mine.
Yes. No, it's okay. It's true. It's very true. It's, you know, but when we really started to connect outside of school at an after school program called Connections. But the idea for the business kind of stemmed from him coming to me in our high school hallways when we were seniors. And he was just, yo, I want to be the next person in music. I want to be this, that, and the third. You know, he had his inspirations. And I was just like, all right, cool, let's do it. Because I'm really on the technical side of everything. Right. So in high school, I was really into media, music production, theater, chorus, things like that. So he had the business mindset and he has a superpower. I tell him all the time of just being able to connect with people, you know, so everybody loves Ian. So you put those. Yeah, it's like everybody hates Chris, but everybody loves Ian type of thing. But yeah, we came together. It's just throwing parties, throwing events. We took that from high school to college. We had an apartment. If you went to SUNY Fredonia around that time, it was called Apartment 711, which was kind of like the nucleus to where we were starting, which was Ear Entertainment at first. Mm-hmm. And we created a mixtape. We got connected with, you know, some students that were also into music. Shout out to David Salter. It goes by Morrow. He's a producer on the project. We met Cookie. We met our partner, Daquella. Mm-hmm. Daquella Blacks, who's in New York. She's holding it down for us out there. And it grew into this business called Ear Quality. We've just been running with it ever since.
And you were music business majors.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there is the business aspect, the production aspect, but you bring a lot to the table.
Absolutely. I know where I'm good at. I know where I'm not. And while I'm not, I know how to tap into other people. Mm-hmm. And normally I just call Kima. That's why we work very well together. And honestly, myself, Kima, and our business partner, DeQuella, we the one who really brought hip hop to Fredonia, where mm-hmm. it was so focused on bands. And it wasn't necessarily focused on R&B and hip hop. Right. And I wanted to learn more skills about today's industry, not the 80s. And no shade to the 80s, because you need to know what has happened before to go forward.
Right.
Ear Entertainment started in our apartment. Yep. Over time, I got tired of writing Ear Entertainment. You have E-A-R, the entertainment. That's too long. and one of my mentors, one of the managers, still to this day that I look up to, is Scooter Braun, who's Justin Bieber manager, Ariana Grande manager, and he has the Braun Project. Always thought you needed to have the word records in your business, like RC Records or Artisan Records. No, I said, no, it can be something different and still provide the same service. And we always make sure we put quality in our sound. So it was like, put the ear together and put the quality together, and here we are.
Obviously, you're both business-minded as well as being passionate about music. So being business-minded, you obviously saw a hole that needed to be filled and a service that needed to be provided.
Absolutely.
What is that hole here?
Education. You see everybody just, you know, making all this money, but a lot of folks don't know how they make money. And what I've noticed is working with artists in Niagara Falls and Buffalo, they can create the music, but they don't know the best way to put it on different platforms, the best way to make sure you're promoting after the fact, before, after, and during the fact. Mm-hmm. There's so many things that they're missing that they feel like success is going to come to them just like that. But you have to do the legwork.
I think it's also fair to say that along with education, like, there is a lot of history in the music industry that Buffalo is tied to that a lot of people mm-hmm. don't even know about.
Yeah.
Right. We come from Niagara Falls, where we don't have that. We don't have the history, and we definitely have a lot of artists that are trying to do music, and then within 3 years, they just disappear. Why is that? Like, for one, it's definitely teamwork. It's definitely they don't know what they're doing. They just know they see somebody else doing it, and they want to do it themselves. But you know, how many times are we going to watch that, you know, fail? You know what I mean? So what can we do as people that love music and people that are interested in being, you know, the next big business, the next Cash Money, to whatever
OVO,
label you think you think about? Yeah, OVO's right across the street. But at some point, somebody had to do something, and we knew we wanted to do it because we've seen it so much. I've had adult males literally taking me to studios, watching them record, and I would sit there and think, oh, you guys are going to be the next such and such. And then, you know, I hate to say it, but somebody goes to jail or, you know, somebody just falls off. And it's the consistency that we all need to work together. You know, it's just teamwork that we were missing as well, other than just education and talent, real talent.
Well, and you mentioned when you were at Fredonia, finding that hole of, there wasn't a lot of hip hop promotion as far as events go. Mm-hmm. Are you finding that now, and that being maybe a lane for you guys here in Buffalo to be able to, you know, raise up the hip hop community here and put that to light?
Absolutely.
I would say that's a great question. And I would say absolutely, but at the same time, yes and no. I feel like a lot of the good spot to really have these shows do not support hip hop, and that's the problematic, and that's the problem with us being able to execute so many hip hop, because for some odd reason, hip hop equates to violence, even though rock can equate to violence.
Yep.
R&B can. You might be missing your girl and just get upset, you know. I would say there's a lane for us to tap into, but it's hard. And that's why Kima said my superpower is to build connection, because I can be somewhere let me bring this back. For example, a lot of folks don't know about Musical Fair. I built a connection with the person that oversees Musical Fair that's on Damon's campus, but not run by Damon. But a lot of people don't rent it. But being that I had that relationship, I was able to get that spot. And that's a beautiful spot, had a nice cabaret. But some people don't believe in the vision because people don't articulate their vision correctly. I think what we do, we help the artists get their vision out so it can make sense to someone who owns a business or a business owner.
Now, as far as the things that you work on with artists, you know, we're in the streaming world. You obviously want to promote them. You can promote them in other ways than shows. Not that long ago, Black Lives Matter, a lot of record labels and businesses made promises to focus on signing Black artists, promoting Black music, because it wasn't that the music wasn't there. They just weren't being promoted. Do you feel that that has happened? Is there still a lot of room to grow in that area?
It's definitely still a lot of room to grow. I think that the promise was in a way, I think when big companies or corporations, whoever make a deal or a promise to help promote, you know, I guess our community, you can say, it starts to feel like I don't want to say propaganda, but a ploy almost, you know, at that time, DEI and
hot topic.
Yeah, it's the trending thing and everybody wants to get looked at as, oh, an ally, you know, and especially at that time when there was a lot of attention being brought to, you know, just the abuse that happens in our type in our communities from the different aspects, from police brutality to, you know, our women getting underpaid. And I think almost all women are underpaid. It's not just Black women, but just the discrepancies and the disparities between different communities. And then when you put music into it, there were a lot of popcorn acts that came since 2020. And by that, I mean, you know, you get a viral song, you're hot for like a year, and then they kind of disappear. But there's no real development. You're just kind of giving them a spotlight. And then once, you know, that flame is gone, they're gone. Not too long, we did see, I forget which company it was, but they dropped 50 acts in one day.
You know, I think it was UMG. I could be wrong.
I want to say Atlantic.
Atlantic?
One of those.
They're all tied together. They're all connected.
But then, you know, you see it. Like, it's clear when it's no longer in the interest of said company that said, hey, we want to help you out. You know, you're gone or you're shelved or we never hear you again. And, that's a thing that's happened several times. And at this point, I just think that it's kind of weird. Like, we don't need it anymore at this point. At this point, the industry is kind of converting to the independent route of things, which is really what we wanted this entire time, is to assist the independent acts, not necessarily like sign everybody and then shelve them when whenever they're not good to you anymore.
Absolutely. If I may piggyback off of that, I think it's easy to sign acts of color, but what about the executives? We need more executive of colors in the room to have these type of conversation too, as well. I feel like there's a lot of data-driven decision rather than just feeling. I'm a true believer about how music makes you feel. My favorite saying, where words fail, music speaks. So I truly feel that music is going to be that guide for you. And if we can't find the right people and put in the right position and not focus on data, I don't know where the music industry might go. And we might just focus on artists can make quick money and then drop and move on to the next person. I call them the TikTok artists that great to do a TikTok, but can't really move numbers.
Well, the fact that the way you're talking, it gives me hope because you highlighted a lot of things that people don't think about that play a role in the music business, you know, talking about UMG, the CEO of UMG, who is making the most money off all of these battles between Drake and Kendrick, you know, who is the one that's actually benefiting? And now obviously we have lawsuits happening, but if you look at the business executives,
truthfully, they're the only ones really benefiting still. When you think about it, because remember when Spotify cut the checks and all the VPs were only people getting millions of dollars, but Spotify has millions and millions of artists who, you know, only get like 1,000 streams. Mm-hmm. With that little bit of change you get, went to their pockets.
Yep.
And they made it that way. But, you know, today, like, who is benefiting? That's a great question, because now that Drake, well, if you haven't heard, Drake is suing UMG because of defamation and all of that. But
shortly after Kendrick's album was
released. Absolutely
right. So I mean, technically UMG would be benefiting, but in this case, if Drake wins this lawsuit, they're not going to be benefiting. Nobody's going to benefit because they have all the control. And
yeah.
As long as their control is messed up, they're not going to be happy.
And at the end of the day, the labor's out here to make money.
At the end of the day.
It was a hot topic, hot time for Kendrick to make money. Of course, they're going to push that. Drake, you've been making money for over several decades.
Yeah.
Of course, they're going to push on that's hot.
Yeah.
But I could understand the negative impact or the negative comments that folks feel as if like they pushed it in a sense to
defame him or make him seem like something that he's not, quote unquote. I don't know what he is. I'm not going to say, but
we know the persona of Drake. We don't know Aubrey Graham.
We don't.
And I just know him from Degrassi. That's about it.
That's fair.
Well, we do know that behind the scenes and in these higher business powers, we need more people like Ian and Kimon.
So say that one more time. Yeah.
You better go ahead.
Say it one more time. I did. And hi, Zach, you said? Oh, man.
So how do you advise new artists when you know how things work currently?
Yes.
You know there is room for change. So you are fighting that battle on your own front in business, but then also trying to advise up and coming artists and motivate them and give them hope.
Absolutely.
If you don't mind.
Go first.
I will say Kimon and I have a unique talent of we have background higher education. So we know how to meet artists where they are and make things digestible, not trying to kill you with all the jargon, the slogan. No, this is what you need to do. But we advise them with patience, ease, and understanding they don't know everything. That's why they either hire us or tap into us. But really being able to advise them and not wanting more than them. One of the biggest things that I learned in our field is that the manager or the executive should not want it more than the artist. Mm-hmm. I'm not the talent. I can do as much as that your talent get us to. So I find it very interesting.
I would say when I was in college, and I think it was you and I that had a conversation in where you have to really understand the industry that you're going into, right? Like when you're pursuing a degree in bio, you got to know what the field is like before going out there, what to expect, things you get paid, and what the risk and everything. Even in this field, the music industry is like the only industry where, you know, the major powers that be have a stake in all the major, well, I can't even say that. I feel like the medical field is similar, but we're not going to go there. to advise the artists that are coming up, there is a bunch of, there's different lanes they can choose from. You know, there's ways to make money in this industry still. Regardless of what's happening with the majors and the streaming platforms, the independent lane is always going to be there because even without a major, you can make it happen, right? Like there's platforms like even.biz where you can go and you can sell your, do a direct to consumer with your music. There's merchandise you can still do. Companies still look to make money off of other companies, right? Somebody's looking to make a t-shirt. Somebody's going to make you this t-shirt. And like Ian said, with the venues, like you can get into the booking business in terms of booking shows for artists or being the guy that's a tour manager. There's a way to make money. I engineer and DJ, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not an artist, but I can make some money out of this industry.
That boy can sing. Don't let him fool you. Go ahead, sorry.
That'll be the next show. Now I'm curious.
Get some Christmas carols. But you know, it's all about weighing your options in this industry. Like if you believe in yourself, you can make things happen. But I think a lot of people that are at the independent level before getting to that spot, you got to understand that you're not them. You got to do more than them to get where they are, for one. And then two, don't expect the same treatment as an independent act versus a Drake, a Little Baby, a Kendrick Lamar, or whoever sings or whatever. You got to do you, and you got to lock into that. And you got to tap in with Ear Quality because we can help you with that. You know what I mean?
You start somewhere. I think that's one of the things that when artists are starting, everybody started somewhere.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
What are your hopes for Ear Quality in 2025?
Ooh.
Great question. I love that. We have an event that we're putting together right now. I think my goal is really to make sure it happens in February. So something for the couples, for the loved ones out there, for the ladies. typically we do our event in October, but of course next October is going to be round four, R&B Ain't Dead coming back. We're going to do some more promo runs. We're going to interact with more artists. What you got?
I've been working on this idea. We've been working on this idea since this year, but I really want to execute it in 2025. It's called Can We Brunch? Mm. So it's intertwining with cannabis and brunch. Everyone loves a good brunch if you're really a good foodie. I love my mimosas. But intertwining with the prestige and the elegance of like Atlanta brunch, where you got to get dressed up and really have a good vibe, mm-hmm. provide a band and cannabis infused food. Some people don't have to have cannabis infused food. It can be regular food, but something where we can be all grown and have a really good brunch. And the idea of Can We Brunch is dancing with the song Can We Talk. Because I wanted it to be 90s theme. Mm-hmm. So it's like, Can We Brunch? So that's something that I'm really, really focused on this year. And I have to find a new home for R&B Ain't Dead this year, too, because that venue is closing. So I have to find a new home. So I'm really excited, though, for this mm-hmm. this new year. We have a lot of things in the pipeline. One of our biggest clients, Shay Noor, has been having success lately. So she's been keeping us busy. So 2025 looking
for sure
really, really great. And really kind of going back to our alma mater next year. That's my goal, to really talk to the music business students. I think mm-hmm. that's important because we didn't have folks that's about our age or look like us to kind of come back and talk to the school. Yeah. So 2025. Our website's up, more merch coming out. I'm excited.
A lot of DJ gigs coming up. Child's Pop, my partner, we got a contract. You can't necessarily say where we ain't signing yet.
So I'm also managing Kimon too on the side. Too, yeah. So.
Help me go to this DJ brand, DJ 360.
Yeah. Sign me up for all the events, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, I got you.
I mean, sign me up.
I found you on Instagram. I got you.
We'll get you a seat. Yeah, right. A special spot right
here. Reserved.
So if somebody wants to talk to the two of you about a career, or they're in music, or they want to talk to you about events, what is the best way to get involved with Ear Quality?
The best way is on our social media, either that's ear_quality on Instagram, or you can check me, Ian the Ear. Kimon, what's your
_DJ360.
Yes, or you can just go to our wonderful website, earquality.com, for all information.
And do the contact form for us. Go ahead.
Yes. And also, we have available free split sheets. If you don't know what that is, go on our website. We educate you.
You guys are the real deal.
We try. Make sure you tell the people that.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll get all that info posted along with this episode, perfect. Too, so people know how to get a hold of you and follow your successes. And can we maybe come back in some way and talk about this UMG thing and follow it? Because I am so curious to know your insights this thing keeps going.
Man,
Go off, bro.
I keep telling them, like, we're going to have a podcast at the house because we be having conversations at home. Like, listen, that needs to be on TV.
Yeah,
I can't wait to come back and talk about that.
Yeah, I just think this whole thing is just interesting. But at the same time, it's business. It's not personal.
Yeah, all right.
It's been a pleasure, Ian and Kimon. I look forward to talking to you again and seeing all the great things that Ear Quality does in the new year.
Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Stay with us. We'll be back with Jay Moran speaking with Henri Muhammad. This is What's Next on WBFO.
This is Jack Cruiser with The Scoreboard on WBFO. Listen during Morning Edition and All Things Considered each Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the latest on pro matchups and college rivalries, as well as standout local athletes from Western New York and Southern Ontario. Want more? Listen to a longer version of The Scoreboard at WBFO.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And welcome back to What's Next. And we're welcoming back to our conversation today, Henri Star Muhammad.
Thank you.
Good to have you back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
The Muhammad School of Music, we actually talked to you earlier this year during your 25th anniversary. You've had a busy, busy year. I think I read that you're closing in on 100 appearances, performances this
yes.
year.
Yes. It has been a tremendous year, this 25th anniversary year. And we've had an opportunity to do what we love to do, which is go out and share the gift of music. And so so far, we've completed over 90 performances, recitals, media appearances, public engagements, outdoor music festivals, music recording sessions all over Western New York, as far as the Southern Tier, up through Niagara County, and then also across the country. And so Chicago, Detroit, New York City, Atlanta, Houston. And so we went and tried to reach 100 engagements by the end of the year.
And you kind of brushed past New York City because you were at one of the legendary venues.
Yes, yes. Just back a couple weeks ago from the Apollo Theater in Harlem, New York City, which was a phenomenal engagement there.
Wait, what was that like? I'm just, the Apollo, you just say it.
Yes.
And it has a magic to it. So what was it like to perform there?
On that stage, you know, when you walk in the door through the stage door, you know, you can see some of the signatures on the wall and people signed the wall. And then I walked through the house, the front end, and there are all the photos of all the great ones that have been through there, the pictures. And then out in front on the street, there on the sidewalk, they have the different memorials, James Brown, Celia Cruz, Prince, Smokey Robinson. So to be in a hall, a place where they've all walked across that stage, is just a phenomenal experience just to be there for that.
You know, it's interesting when I hear you talk, it reminds me, because we have had a chance to have a couple of good conversations. Mm-hmm. You know, you teach the violin, mm-hmm. you teach music and you play the violin, of course, but your appreciation for music covers a wide array of yes. types of music.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm at home doing, of course, classical. That's my specialty. But this engagement at the Apollo, I was a part of a musical production titled Bronzeville, which is actually a community in Chicago, which is like the Harlem of Chicago. And they've taken the story of Brownsville, Chicago, and they've condensed it down to a musical production. So in this production, we do cover every musical genre from spiritual, blues, jazz, R&B, hip hop. So I had an opportunity with my violin to play all of those genres, and I thoroughly enjoyed it there in the Apollo in New York City.
Wow. Wow, that's thrilling just to talk about it. And of course, we can maybe circle back to that type of conversation as we move through here, because we have you here talking about one of those 100 appearances that are coming up.
Yes.
And this is going to be at the AKG on December 15th. You're going to have your, I think your chamber players are going
yes,
to be there,
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah. We'll be producing, presenting the legendary Vivaldi's Four Seasons. Now, this piece is over 300 years old.
Mm.
And the Four Seasons, Antonio Vivaldi for string players is one of our founding fathers. I mean, his, you know, as a string musician, a player, you will play Vivaldi, you will study Vivaldi. But the Four Seasons has become one of the most famous, recognizable pieces of classical music ever written. And technically speaking, the Vivaldi's Four Seasons remains one of the most technically challenging pieces for violinists to play as a solo and for orchestras to perform as an ensemble. So we're going to present all Four Seasons in the AKG. We're so excited because the AKG is one of the top art museums in the world, right here in Buffalo, our city. And so to bring this art musical masterpiece, the Four Seasons, to the masterpiece of the AKG, it's going to be just a brilliant afternoon on Sunday, December 15th at 3 p.m.
And for those who haven't been to the the remodeled AKG or the new AKG. You're going to be in, I think they call it the town hall,
yes.
town square. With they have done a spectacular job of building that up and making it into a just a glistening space.
Yes, yes. And we're hoping that the violins and the ambiance and the overall feel is just everyone that comes in, we hope will feel enlivened and rejuvenated with the music and being in the AKG itself.
But so what about the idea of playing the Four Seasons, though, in mid-December in Buffalo? I mean, we're all focused on one season.
Yes, I know. So the Four Seasons, what makes this piece special is that Vivaldi actually wrote a poem that coincides with each of the seasons. And so sometimes they call it program music. And this was actually kind of something that was new for classical music, where the composer wants the audience to actually think about what they're listening to. So for each season, starting with spring and then summer, autumn, and then winter, we're going to end with winter. If you read the program notes, it kind of tells you what the music is doing and what it sounds like. And so, you know, for summer there is a storm, right? And we actually had a tornado this past summer right here in downtown right. Buffalo. You can hear that in the music, right? And then in autumn you can hear the joyfulness of the harvest period, right? And then in winter you can hear the frigid temperatures. And I mean, the winter is probably the most, you know, the most fiery, electric of all of them. That's what we're going to end with. So, and then I'm going to leave out spring. Spring, that concerto is probably the most famous of all of the seasons, and it's very joyous and whatnot. And so we're going to hit all of those in each of our own, in our individual way, through the students of Muhammad School Music and our professional players that will join me in the AKG.
Now, will you be playing and leading, or?
Yes, okay. Yes. I'm going to conduct and play the violin solos. It's just going to be an outstanding concert. Now, I also want to mention, too, that along with the professional players and the students, we're going to feature the students of Muhammad School of Music performing. And we also will feature an original composition composed by my son, Akbar Khan Muhammad. He wrote a piece titled Moon. Mm. Which he's performed now all over the country with orchestra, and he's going to present the Buffalo premiere of this work, which has gotten rave reviews. Actually, on his Chicago performance, the audience actually demanded an encore. So he did. He had to do it again, and so we're excited to produce it and premiere it here in Buffalo.
Give us a little, I mean, it's always so fascinating to talk to you and ask you these questions, but to take us inside the mind of your son a little bit in this piece and what you hear. I mean, give us just a little bit of a taste.
Yeah, so my son, who is my son, but he's an adult now, he's in his 20s, but, you know, he conceived this piece a few years ago, and I remember him playing it for me on piano, and then that was a couple years ago, and then it evolved. He arranged it for string orchestra and then took it on the road, first performing it in Detroit with string orchestra. And then the ensemble that he performs with, they've been all over the country now, Houston and Chicago. And they just came back from Atlanta last week. But the piece is according to, as he shared with me, the piece not only is a tribute to the moon as a celestial, but the way the piece flows, as he shared, is part of his own personal experiences and life challenges. And that's what, you know, composers do. We take, and actually any creative, we take our life experiences, whether it's through music or dance or visual art or literary art, and we write it into something that we can convey that others can receive and experience in their own way. And I know this piece, that when every time I listen to it, I take away something different from experiencing it. And I'm looking forward to experiencing it in the AKG, in that setting where we'll be on Sunday, December 15th. I'm really looking forward to it.
And we should also mention that this is a free event. Donations
yes.
will be accepted, of
yes,
course.
Yes.
So that's a nice other opportunity there as well, right?
Yes,
for somebody
yes.
maybe to taste, get a sample of your musical ability, your school's musical ability, and you know, see how much they like it. Do you hope it makes that kind of a connection?
Yes. We love going out into the community and sharing the gift of music of what we do. And the AKG has made it the opportunity for us to present this free concert as part of our 25th anniversary year. And so, we will ask for donations and contributions, because what that does is that helps us be able to produce the next one. But, at the beginning, we shared that we're nearing 100 engagements, and those engagements have spawned everywhere from concert recitals like in Klein Hands, to churches, to community centers, nursing homes, backyard parties, other cities, outdoor music festivals, any venue that we can come to visit. If in the listening audience, if you have something that coming up and you want us to come and bring our violins and bring our gift of music, please reach out to us, because it's what we love to do. We're in our practice studios practicing, but then, we leave the studio, we go out into the world and share this gift.
We're talking with Henri Star Mohammed today on What's Next. Back with us. It's interesting, because last time we talked, it was you had your reunion weekend, right?
Yes.
With a lot of your former players, and mm-hmm. Played Beethoven. It was a big weekend, and I recall talking to you and your sense of anticipation. Take us from that sense of anticipation to the actual performance. When you're there mm-hmm. on stage and you're doing this, what changes from the rehearsals to the performance?
That's the exciting part. That is the journey, as I try to share with my students, that we practice, we put in hours a day, in our practice rooms, in our studios. And then when we practice like that to get to the point where we walk up on the stage, and, I try to be present through all of it so that, I don't miss all that goes into that moment. And the moment when we presented the Beethoven Violin Concerto, this was back in May 19th, and to walk out on the stage and look into the audience and to hear, the Beethoven Concerto starts off with four pulses from the timpani drum. And when I heard those four beats of the timpani drum that starts that concerto, it's like, it's like in boxing, they say, this is the main event. I forgot the announcer. He would say, let's get ready to rumble. It was time to rumble. There's no turning back. There's no, I'm not going to turn and walk off the stage. It's all the way forward at that point. And I and the orchestra, La Camerata de San Antonio, under the direction of Maestro Christopher Weber, we put that piece together, and it was as electrifying as it ever would be until the next time, which we're going to plan the next one, because Beethoven never rests. You never put Beethoven away. He's always ready for the next time.
So it sounds like you felt like the performance was terrific. The audience most likely responded in kind, but at the same time, you're also, you're a teacher, so there's a technical part of you. How do you grade your personal performance?
I think my personal performance, I would give it an A-.
Okay.
And I think that gives me room to shoot for the A+. Beethoven, string players, musicians, any musician, any instrument will tell you that you never finish Beethoven. Beethoven is almost like a spiritual text that, you might read that passage, in your youth or whatever, or your youth and spirituality, but you might read it differently and understand it differently in your spiritual maturity. Beethoven is like that, so the Beethoven that I played 20 years ago is not the same as it was, a few months ago, 20 years later. And it will not be the same that it will be 20 years from now. And so we're constantly, studying, researching, and not that just in a literal sense, but also in the aesthetic way of trying to go deeper into what Beethoven wrote, because his music is just like that, And so the next time I mount the stage to perform the Beethoven Violin Concerto, it's going to be even greater than it was back in May, because there's always something more to go into with a piece like that.
If you could just carry on with this just a little bit more, because it's intriguing to hear you say that there's always more. So you know, what are you then looking for as a performer? Or is just as you continue to play it, you find different nuances that you can bring to the performance?
Yeah. So Beethoven, you know, that particular, you know, speaking exclusively on the violin concerto, you know, there was so much going on in Beethoven's life when he wrote that piece. He was suffering from the onset of his deafness, you know, the debilitating, almost career-ending handicap. He also was suffering from his personal life and the love of his life leaving him, right? He was suffering from the social rejection that came from the things that he experienced in Europe at the time. And so he's writing all this into this piece, right? And so as an artist, you know, for me personally, it's more than just playing the notes on the page. That's just the technical aspect of it. But it's what might be going on in my personal life at the time, right? And so, you know, it's like playing the blues. You know, you can strum the chords, but it's not until my baby left me that singing it is a whole different, you know, type of therapy, you know. And so you know, and studying the piece this time with the challenges, the personal life challenges, the challenges of pulling off the 25th anniversary, the challenges of the fundraising and family things and personal things and things going on in the world as a whole. You know, all that goes into what's going on in my mind when I'm playing the notes, and then it becomes a little clearer. So this is what Beethoven may have been feeling at this point. And in this passage, when, you know, the 16th notes are playing, and that tension that's there, right? And then there's a dissonance that Beethoven writes. All that comes out in the music. So when I strike the note on my violin, I can put some juice into it now because I feel it more than just the intellectual feeling, but now there's something that's happening in my heart and my soul that I can feel it a little deeper. So Beethoven is like that. I mean, and I'm sure other composers experience it like that. I'm sure someone that might listen to B.B. King saying the thrill is gone. I mean, you know, for someone that might be going through a divorce, that piece is medicine because, you know, so that's how I experienced the music.
It's a fascinating conversation, though. I do appreciate you indulging me with it for sure. And it takes me back also to the idea that, you know, you have been teaching kids in the city of Buffalo classical music, you know, for 25 years. And what was the number here? 10,000 children.
Yeah. Yeah.
10,000 children. To me, when I hear you talk like that, you're connecting with me, and I think a lot of our listeners. How about when it's with kids, though? Do you have to? Ideally, you'd love to be able to mm-hmm. connect with them at such an advanced level.
Right.
How do you bring them to that point?
So I think, you know, with my students, you know, just this year alone, I have close to 100 students on the roster, and I think it's about sharing with them the passion and the love for the instrument and for music. And so, you know, I love the violin, and I hope that when they see me not just perform, but when they see me talk about the instrument, talk about performing on the instrument, that love transcends into them so that they too can fall in love with the instrument. And I can see that. I can see the excitement in their face when it's time for violin class or go to violin lessons. I can see that in the faces of the parents when they see their children get up on the stage and do a recital or do a performance. I can see that in the students when we go out to perform. So a couple back in September, was it September? It was in October. We performed for the National Convention of Black Storytellers here in Buffalo.
Oh my!
Their national convention was here, and we were invited to perform for the opening night. And the reception was just overwhelming, you know. And for the students to be able to experience that, you know, that they were able to get up on stage and play their violin in front of a group of strangers that have never seen them, that don't know Muhammad's music because they're all from out of town, but to receive that type of reaction, I think it's something that stays with them forever. And, you know, and whether they become, you know, professional musicians, I do have some professional musicians that have come out of our studio, or they become, you know, we have lawyers, doctors, police officers, state troopers, politicians. I mean, literally every field of endeavor, I run into students who've come through the studio doors. But whatever they go into, I hope that that what they carry with them from their experience with the violin and with Muhammad's music is is the dedication and the passion for, you know, what they believe in and what they commit themselves to. And so, you know, it's, you know, it's 10,000 so far, and I hope to give another 25 years, you know, in the art, and see what comes out of that. So, yes.
So what did you play at the Storytellers Convention?
We did actually, we performed our rendition of Bob Marley's No Woman, No Cry. I think we did a snippet of Beethoven's Ode to Joy from his Ninth Symphony, and then I ended with my rendition of Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And so I've been performing that lately, and it came in as a special request, actually for a memorial service. So a part of our tour has been, I've done funerals and memorial services, and a special request came in for Somewhere Over the Rainbow and the theme from Annie, Tomorrow. So I put it together, and little did I know that I would actually love performing those two pieces, Somewhere Over the Rainbow and the theme from Annie, Tomorrow, have just, so they become a staple part of my repertoire now that I go out and perform.
What do you like about performing them?
I think there's something in the way the harmonies, you know, and I'm able to articulate, you know, through my violin with my instrument, you know, the way the instrument is built, but also, you know, because I, along with classical music, I love, you know, all genres. And so, you know, the song Somewhere Over the Rainbow, which is typically sung, it gives me the opportunity to attempt to sing it through my violin. How can I make my violin voice in a way that, you know, I do justice to, of course, the composer, right? But my own rendition, as if I were singing it, but I get to sing it through my violin. And I just love doing that. I just love, you know, every time I don't play it exactly the same every single time, but every single performance, I'm able to say something, you know, differently, say something, you know, in a new way on that piece in particular, Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
And so I'm going to assume here and guess that you, as you said it, you have your violin sing in these. So you must have done it for other songs then too, yes?
Yes. Yeah, I sang Beethoven Violin Concerto, which is, you know, there are no words to it, but the violinist, you know, we know that it's like the song without words. And I think that's what makes, you know, a great, you know, musician, but a great violinist, is that can we make the instrument articulate what's not being articulated with, you know, words, you know? So we're going to do some of that with the Vivaldi also on the 15th. So,
yeah. Andre Star Muhammad with us talking about the Muhammad School of Music, but also their 25th anniversaries this year, and they're getting ready to wrap up a really busy year with a free concert at the AKG on December 15th at, what, 3 o'clock, right?
Yes.
In the town square, the beautiful new town square at the AKG. Of course, donations will certainly be welcome. Also, you told us, like you said, you even go to nursing homes. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, before my mother passed, I recall performers coming into their facility, and it is a whole different kind of experience.
Yes, it is.
For the way the music interacts with people. What do you yes. sense when you're there?
So one of my joys is to be able to take the music into hospitals and nursing homes. Both I go individually and I take my students. I want them to be able to experience performing in a setting where it's not client hands or it's not, you know, an audience standing ovation, but to go into settings where we're serving, you know, which is almost like a ministry. We're serving those who are sick and shut in, right? And so we go into the nursing homes, and we bring the same energy and zeal that we have on stage, like I said, at Klein Hands or wherever, or at the Apollo. We take that same energy into the nursing homes. And I mean, this month alone, we have four on our schedule. And so, you know, we go there and we take Vivaldi, Beethoven, we take, you know, we take contemporary music, we take, you know, Celine Dion, and what else do we do? We did Somewhere Over the Rainbow and all those
holiday classics.
And, you know, to be able to take the music and see their spirits lift up, you know, and also to bring young people. I mean, you know, I bring my students, and you know, and then also for them to be able to go and see, you know, it's not the glamour and the glitz of being on stage and the lights and all that stuff, but it's going in and really taking your music and the healing power of that music and sharing it. And so it's just as important in engagements for us to go into the nursing home and hospitals as it is to be on stage in the big concert halls.
You know, earlier before we went on the air here, you were telling me about you have, a portion of your son's piece. Is it Moon or the Moon?
Moon. Yes.
On one of your social media platforms.
Yes.
Do you put some of your other things on social media?
Yes, I do. I'll put little clips up, you know, and on social media and some of the other social media platforms to kind of share and get you to see the responses that we get from all over the country. So it's just, you know, we try to get what we do out there is often, of course, being on the show here with, you know, with you. It just helps us get the word out and get the music out and get the message out.
So where do we find you on social media?
So we're on Facebook. You can search both Muhammad's School of Music and Henri Star Muhammad, and then we're also on Instagram under Muhammad's School of Music and Henri Star. Actually, on Instagram, it's Henri Star 19, Henri Star, and then 19. Those are the two main platforms that we use, and then sometimes we're on YouTube and things like that.
Okay.
Too. Yeah.
Well, so which platform do you find like the most interesting responses?
I get various responses. I know my son's piece on Facebook has over 25,000 views.
Wow.
And then on Instagram, you know, it's a different kind of platform, but, you know, similar, you know, sharing on there and, you know, keeping our presence, you know, on the social media. And then we want to invite people. It's one thing to see it on social media, or see it on a computer screen or on your phone, but to come out and experience it live, you know, in real time is another, it's a whole another experience.
Yeah. And just to put out another conversation we had before we went on the air, you went to see Beethoven's Ninth.
Oh yeah,
at Klein Hands, performed by the BPO. You were in the audience this time. You've been on stage in various capacities. This time you're in the audience. What was that like?
So I, you know, as you shared, I've had the opportunity to perform in the first violin section of the Beethoven Ninth, the entire Ninth Symphony. I've conducted the BPO in the fourth movement of the Ninth Symphony, which is a different experience. It's one thing to play it. It's another thing to conduct it. But this time when the BPO performed it back in May, I got tickets and I went and I sat in the audience. And my first time sitting and listening to it in a live setting, and I have to say that I was moved to tears. To experience the masterpiece that Beethoven wrote. And, you know, I've studied Beethoven. Beethoven is my passion, his life, his art, his mission. But to think that what he wrote at that time of his life, you know, which was his lowest point, at this point he is completely deaf. And also, in a sense, his career had died at the time. You know, he was writing music, but it wasn't being received and whatnot. But this piece, his Ninth Symphony, came in as his triumphant victory, like his resurrection from the dead. And the way he wrote the orchestra, at this point in classical music, the Ninth Symphony was the largest orchestral piece ever written. New instruments added to the orchestra, but then he wrote it for chorus and vocal soloist. And so on the stage, I'm sitting in the audience watching this, and I see the BPO, Maestro Joanne Folletta, the Buffalo Philharmonic chorus, and the vocal soloist, and there is an electricity in the room in Klein Hands Music Hall, right? And then to hear this piece, which was the largest and the longest orchestral work written to that date. Nearly an hour long. And then the way he wrote the music, the first movement, Beethoven was writing music at that point that was 50 years ahead of its time compared to his contemporaries. And at one point I was just moved to tears. You know, and then the vocal soloists who not just sung their part, but they actually almost theatrically interpreted their part. I mean, it was just a marvelous concert. And you know, I'm thankful that we have the BPO in our city. Some of the BPO musicians performed with me when I did the Beethoven Violin Concerto on May 19th. And so to have them in our city, to have Maestro Joanne Folletta, who also celebrating her 25th year leading the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra. I mean, they are just a marvelous gem of an ensemble. And so, you know, we're thankful for them, and we look forward to more collaborations with them moving forward.
And, you know, I think I could listen to you talk about Beethoven all day, but we're coming down to our final moments here. But a similar thought then. So it's Vivaldi's Four Seasons. It's going to be played at the AKG on December 15th at 3 p.m., a free concert. Donations welcome, but make your pitch for Vivaldi's Four Seasons for us.
Yes, so Vivaldi's Four Seasons, one of the greatest works of classical music ever written, much of which you might hear in commercials, in the radio, and TV shows. You're going to hear this and say, you know what, I've heard that piece before. And it will be the students of Muhammad School Music joined by our professional players of the Muhammad School Music Chamber players. And we're going to put this concert on. We're going to perform of all these Four Seasons like you've never heard it before. You know, we each bring our unique flair and excitement and energy to the music. And so it's going to be a great concert December 15th at 3 p.m. in Buffalo's, you know, landmark AKG Town Square. And it will be a free concert. So please invite family, friends, guests, you know, and we want everyone to come out and celebrate with us this, our 25th anniversary year.
Yeah, 25th anniversary year, busy year it has been for Henri Star Muhammad. 100 performances by the end of the year.
Yeah, we're on track.
On track for it. Henri, good luck with the concert, and thanks very much, as always, for joining us on What's Next.
Thank you.
This has been What's Next. Our guest, Henri Star Muhammad of the Muhammad School of Music here in Buffalo. Again, they're coming up on December 15th at the AKG, where they'll be performing Vivaldi's Four Seasons. This has been What's Next on WBFO.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.